Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the brand new week, and it is the only week that I will be broadcasting live. It remains to be seen whether there will be other live programming in this slot, waiting to hear from John Fox as to whether or not he can cover any of my absences Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I have to be away on the road attending some educational stuff to teach me how to be a better activist. So here's hoping the education takes. I'm going to be missing you guys for the next 4 days, so don't think that you're out of sight and out of mind by any stretch of the imagination, because you're not. But that is an unfortunate reality of the coming week. And, oh, what a delightful, restful weekend I had. Jesus. We had lots of work going on around the house, lots of stuff to get done. And among the stuff that was getting done, you know how I got knocked out of a show last week by virtue of the fact that the production computer decided to be persnickety? Yeah, remember? I do. I hate missing work. But I thought, well, at least the streaming computer's behaving. Never spit into the face of the universe. It spits back nastily. Saturday, I shut the streaming computer down for a little bit to do some maintenance. And when I went to turn it back on, it didn't. Just didn't. So, you know, congratulations us. There's some more money to be spent. And, you know, if we were some great big for-profit right-wing-owned media enterprise, we'd just pick up the phone and say, "Dadgummit, get me another computer in here right now!" And that would be the end of it. But as it is, I've scrambled and gotten an old laptop into the line, and I have no idea what this program is sounding like as it is going out to you right now. No idea at all. Although it's looking on my end like levels may be a little bit low. But you know what? It's a damn shame, but there's just not a hell of a lot I can do about it. Hang on. Let me see about that. I'll be right with you. Hang on. Let's see if this makes any difference. Although I suspect it will not. Is that any better? Nope, not a damn bit. Oh, well. Okay, everybody says it sounds good, so I'll stop sweating. But anyway, that was my weekend, in addition to getting ready to go, which is, like, horrible. But we bug out of here tomorrow at oh dark 30, and I won't be back until Friday night. So I beg your indulgence. We'll just run a whole boatload of reruns, like, you know, the last month's worth of reruns or something like that. But you will have live programming coming to you from the Rick Smith Show from 9 to midnight. So please don't forget that. You can get the Rick Smith Show at 9 p.m. Eastern every night. So check in, and you know, Rick will begin to be he'll begin broadcasting to his never heard what liberal radio sounds like audience in central Pennsylvania this week. So make sure that you're helping Rick get the message out. You'll have to listen to for what the new phone number is, because that's still something that's in the works. So there's all of that, and a lot of stuff to get out of the way as well. Since I'm going to be gone for the next 4 days, I can't say anything about trying to keep the contributions going for the week. So I will remind you that we are still in search of the rest of the membership of the Thrifty 250, 250 people who have committed $10 per month via subscription. You can or via snail mail. Either way. The PayPal button and the snail mail address are readily accessible at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. And we are still a long ways from having anything approaching those 250 people. But those $10 contributions have made a significant difference. I hope they continue to make a difference, and I'd love to see that, because, you know, we get to that 250 level and things get considerably easier. And I you know, if we've got 250 people who have actually subscribed, not just sent in a $10 donation or contribution, but who have actually subscribed so that there's $10 every month, then we're in pretty good shape. So just saying. And we will, once everything's come together, we will post everybody in the way of, you know, first name only, so that no one need be made public or anything like that. But, you know, you deserve some sort of recommendation and recognition, for having stepped up and supported, real live, honest to goodness, independent media, that is not driven by the avarice inherent in the for-profit anything industry. Folks in San Bruno, California, certainly learned what it means to be provided for by a for-profit corporation, didn't they? Yeah. See, that's the thing. As long as your main motive is profit, nothing else is going to matter nearly as much. It's a curse. Anyway, but enough. So if you guys will continue to contribute, I will. We'll be able to stop sweating quite so much, and be able to stop doing these kind of pitches quite so much, which will be a bonus all the way around. I promise you. Now let's see other stuff. Yeah, the essay. By the way, you'll get a kick out of this. You know, I enjoy Tony Bourdain's No Reservations program. I've told you it's the only program I watch. I will tune in at 10 p.m. Eastern Time tonight and watch it as well. It's just, I mean, it's the only TV I watch. Apart from having near heart attacks watching certain football games that whose results I am not now allowed to broadcast any longer, because there are some people who are on the other side of the planet who get stuff ruined for them because I happen to talk about them. But, yeah, I nearly, that was no good Friday night. But anyway, apart from that, I watch No Reservations with Tony Bourdain. And I was just doing some reading over the weekend, some stuff that people were tweeting about him and so forth. And I read, over at Slate.com, I read an excellent interview with him. And I guess this person writes a blog about what it means to be wrong about things. And it was fascinating. And the last question in the interview Anthony Bourdain was, who would you love to see being interviewed about being wrong? And you know what Bourdain answered? Dick Cheney. And I'd love for him to be getting waterboarded while the interview was taking place. Oh, I knew. I knew there was a reason I liked this guy. And then I found the comment where apparently he showed up on Anderson Cooper 360. I don't know if there was a Calliope playing in the background or not. You'll remember the Calliope story, I hope. But at any rate, he appeared on Anderson Cooper 360, where he told Anderson Cooper that the teabaggers were a bunch of marginalized, angry white people. Now, for us, that's kind of a duh moment, but wow, that was, and I guess, like, people have been saying hateful things about him and the The nasty little right-wing thugs have been having fun at his expense and so forth. I think he's a big boy and can take it.
Because, you know, when the right wing comes after you, it's not like
they're the sharpest bunch of knives in the drawer. Hey, it's communist. Communist, Islamo-fascist, Nazi. And doesn't love America.
Yeah.
But anyway, I knew there was a reason I enjoyed what he did. And for that reason, I felt all the better about having entered my little agglomeration of words over at BourdainMediumRaw.com. If you want a link to it, you'll find it. You'll find it in my tweet. In my tweets, you'll also find it on my Facebook page. So please, let me see. Where are we right now? I show that we are ranked numbered 122 out of 1,648 entries. That ain't bad. We have 173 votes. Granted, it'll take 5,000 votes or something like that to win the online portion because of our friend who refers to herself as a white Texican. I don't know quite exactly what that means, but she's apparently gotten her salsa dancing class and 8 million Facebook followers to carry the weight for her. Not jealous or anything, just telling you. But anyway, it would take about 5,000 votes to propel us to number one. On the other hand, a couple of hundred votes puts us in the top 50. Voting remains open until the 30th day of September. I read the legalese I always read the rules. And I guess because I'm involved with broadcasting, one of the things that I pay attention to that maybe others don't, The rules say that the voting closes at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, September 30th. There's only one problem, and someone needs to tell Mr. Lawyer, who wrote the legalese boilerplate. 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time means 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, right? Spring forward, fall back, because we won't be out of daylight savings time on September 30th. But anyway, that's kind of beside the point, and it shows you what a sad little obsessive compulsive type I am. But anyway, the voting closes at what the lawyers call 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on September the 30th. And you can vote every day until then. Every day. It's real easy to log in with your Facebook account. And it doesn't, like, co-opt your Facebook account and start sending, I don't know, little Farmville Poland China hogs or Dominic or hens or whatever to the rest of your face. No, it doesn't do any of that. It just connects. That's one of those groovy new things about the interwebs, is that you can connect to all kinds of blogs with your Facebook or your Twitter or your what's the Google thing, Geek, or I don't know. But you can do it that way, and you can vote every day. The only thing is, as the author of the piece, I can't vote at all. Not once at all. So there you have it. And it's a pretty – I'm pretty proud of it. I'm pretty proud of the little essay. And it would be great if we saw it, because when you go and you look at it, it's at BourdainMediumRaw.com. In the search box, if you just type monolith, M-O-N-O-L-I-T-H, you'll find me dancing around the monolith with a spoon. Go there, and there's a little sort of real-time thing showing who's voting for what and who's commenting on what. It would be cool if there was just a whole bunch of people that said, I vote, and, you know, so-and-so voted for dancing around the monolith with a spoon, because then other people go and look and they vote too, and you build this sort of energy around the thing. Why do I want to do this? Yeah, I think it'd be cool to be published in the back of the paperback version of Medium Raw, but I'll be honest, the 10 grand would be great. Being able to pay off the horns bills. And, oh, have we got bills. And we're going to have more bills, because remember, did I tell you that a computer died this weekend? Yeah. So that's at least a power supply, probably a motherboard, maybe a processor. It ain't real encouraging. And that's money. But that's what it takes to keep all of this stuff going. It's it's a costly undertaking. Let me see if that phone works again. Murgatroyd, get me another computer in here, stat! Pronto! Your job's on the line! Yeah, Murgatroyd's still not here. Probably won't be either. But you know what? We'll figure out a way. By the time I get back here, I'll have the weekend to sort things out, and depending on what happens, maybe we can pay the balance down a little bit over where we buy all our computer equipment and buy that new power supply or motherboard or processor or all of the above and get this thing back into line before the old, tired, worn-out laptop bites the dust. Everybody's saying the sound is good. John up in New York State, there furiously washing pot sherds and cataloging data, says that the stream is good, as does Kate. Out, Kate on the road, we'll just say on the road. Good to hear from Jude. Perfect audio. Thank heaven for small favors. Marty wants to know if I know that Mercury is in retrograde. My whole world is in retrograde. Why would I focus on poor little Mercury? But there you go. And, it's 16 minutes past the hour, and I've almost forgotten the purpose of the program this evening. Oh, but how could I? No, I know what tonight is. So do you. It's the March of the Morans! Yes, indeed. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Get your Morans, red hot Morans, right here, right now. It's Moran Monday, right behind this thin wall of the most threadbare canvas. You will find right-wing Morans in abundance, more right-wing Morans than you can shake a stick at. Head for the hills, people, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. It's Moran Monday on the horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. These are shocking Morans. Morans that you will not believe your ears to hear or your eyes to see. If you can see them, you're on something, because this is radio. No, it's Moran Monday on the horn. Step for nothing more than less than 5 cents per hour. 5 cents per hour. Your $10 contribution to the horn yields you these Morans. At less than 5 cents per hour for your monthly contribution of $10. Step behind the curtain. You will be surprised. You will be nauseated. You will be aggravated. You will be infuriated by the moranity of the right wing in this poor, benighted country. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Moran Monday on the horn is underway. Now, see, some broadcasters would have that all pre-recorded and just run it there. Now the music's pre-recorded. I do not have John Philip Sousa back here behind me. He's kind of dead. But no, that part's too much fun for me to just record it and run it. Although it is a sideshow. And they are morons. Oh, good God, they're dumber than a bag of homemade stupid. And we have proof. I don't just say things. No, no. I was reading over at Psychology Today, and I've read this guy's work before, and he's a real sharp cookie. A man by the name of Satoshi Kanazawa. He's a psychologist at LSE. I don't know what LSE is, but we'll pretend I do. And he's the co-author with the late Alan S. Miller of Why Beautiful People Have More Daughters. That sounds interesting. But anyway, for these purposes... Oh, London School of Economics and Political Science. There we go. LSE. And we'll fight for the old LSE. Yeah, are they Division I or Division I AA? I'm not sure. London School of Economics and Political Science, honorary research fellow in the Department of Psychology at the University College of London, in the Department of Psychology at Birkbeck College, University of London. Yeah, okay. And he's got a Psychology Today blog called The Scientific Fundamentalist. Oh, that's interesting. Very much worth the reading. This is an older blog post from March the 21st, 2010. But it sure does speak to a bunch. The title of it, Why Liberals Are More Intelligent Than Conservatives. This is interesting. Analyses of large representative samples from both the United States and the United Kingdom confirm the prediction that more intelligent individuals are more likely than less intelligent individuals to espouse liberalism as a value. In both countries, the U.S. and the U.K., more intelligent children are more likely to grow up to be liberals than less intelligent children. Stick that in your Oxycontin, what are you, crushing thing, refreshing burst of flavor, spoon thingamajig, mortar and pestle, flush flimball, and choke it, or smoke it, or drink it, or gobble it, or grind it, or whatever the hell it is you do. More intelligent children are more likely to grow up to be liberals than less intelligent children. Among the American sample, for instance, those who identify themselves as very liberal in early adulthood have a mean childhood IQ of 106.4. That's 106.4, the liberal of 106.4, whereas those who identify themselves as very conservative in early adulthood have a mean childhood IQ of
94.8. Can I have some popcorn? Is them paint chips you're chewing on any good? Yum, yum.
Really? Liberals are smarter than morons. There you go. Fascinating piece. You can find it if you look for Satoshi Kanazawa's blog, The Scientific Fundamentalist, over at Psychology Today. That's psychologytoday.com. So it sort of explains why we have a Moran Monday on the horn, because that's what conservatism is comprised of. You know, morons. Just are. Just dealing with facts here. The other side, atne ute aitbre, if you own what I mean. Examples. Examples of morons. This from Mother Jones. It would be a strange Moran Monday indeed if we didn't find some room for the manifest and rampant superstition of the church. Oh, this is a beautiful thing. Posted today by Jen Phillips. Headline, Pope's Low Bar for Miracles. The miracle business is apparently getting a little thin. Living proof this. Apparently this has to do with the sanctification or whatever it is they do to dead people to make them saints. In this case, 19th century Cardinal John Henry Newman got beatified over the weekend in New England. They're in England. Well, you know, you've got a nice weekend with an upcoming autumn in England. You know, what better than to get beatified? Well, that's what they did with Cardinal John Henry Newman. John Henry was a little cardinal sitting on his daddy's knee. He looked at his daddy, said, I'm going to do a miracle and I'm going to be a saint. None of that rhymes. John Henry Newman is a saint or beatified. No, that's not quite sainthood, is it? I can't keep, see, I need the program for this kind of silly, superstitious gobbledygook. No, in 2001, a man in Boston was healed, hallelujah! He was in his 60s. His name was Jack Sullivan. And the Vatican last year confirmed that his healing was a miracle.
A blessing from the Lord. God be praised. Shh.
Morans. Remember, it's Moran Monday. So what would be miraculous about this? Well, here's the miracle. A panel of, this according to Jen Phillips at Mother Jones, a panel of Vatican medical experts took 8 years to determine that Sullivan's recovery from back surgery, oh Lord, heal me, for I have a hangnail. His recovery from back surgery was a miracle. Now, what happened? Well, Sullivan was training to be a deacon, I assume a deacon in the Catholic Church, when he was debilitated by back pain. Now, what it is that brings on that kind of back pain, no one is telling. But I'm sure you're probably guessing, and you're doing so with your dirty, dirty, dirty minds. Anyway, he was training to be a deacon. He was debilitated by back pain. Anybody who's ever had a backache knows, you know, Jesus, God, it hurts. So instead of going to a shaman or a priest or an exorcist, ow, foul back demon. No, he did what a rational person would do. He went to a doctor, a medical doctor. And the doctor said, yeah, you're back. Your back's kind of rough. I think you probably ought to have surgery. So, Mr. Jack Sullivan went and had back surgery. So far, so good. Miracles? No, but I can tell. But so a few days after his surgery, a few days, mind you, this is absolutely going to drive the rational in this audience, which is about 100% of this audience, absolutely to distraction. I was caught between laughing uproariously and just spitting in frustrated. Because we're not talking about, you know, oh, well, you know, the Lord gave us knowledge and we pursued the knowledge and we developed the medical arts over a number of millennia. And now we can do back surgery and people can be relieved of their back pain. And isn't God good? No, this is not that. Dude has back surgery. Several days pass. After several days, flat on his back or in a bed or whatever, Jack Sullivan tried to stand. And when he did, in his words, quote, I felt an intense heat, like an oven blast, and a strong tingling sensation throughout my whole body. I felt an indescribable sense of joy and peace, and was totally transfixed by what I believed to be God's presence. When I became aware of what was happening around me, I was standing upright and I exclaimed to the nurse that I felt no more pain. Show of hands. Miracle? Anybody? Anywhere? Miracle? Miracle of modern science? Yeah, we talk like that sometimes, okay? Well, according to the Roman Catholic Church, no, this was just like Jesus raising the dead. Making the lame to walk, yea, verily, forsooth, and unto heretofore wherefore. The church has declared, it took them 8 years to do it, the church declared this man's successful surgery, thousands of which happen all over the country, if not all over the world, every year. It was a miraculous. It was a miracle. Jeebus done it. Really. Only one problem. The BBC, in announcing the story and the beatification in England of Cardinal John Newman, gonna be a saint, Lord, 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 I'm gonna be a saint someday. Wrong John Henry. No, the BBC reported all this, and as part of the reporting that the BBC did, they consulted some, no, this is a problem, medical experts. The medical literature says that after surgery such as what Mr. Sullivan went through, in some cases a hospital stay of 1 to 3 days may be necessary following the procedure, although most patients may go home, many patients may go home the same day as the surgery. Jack Sullivan's miracle, quote-unquote, was the first of two that John Henry Newman needed. He literally was beatified as part of these two miracles. He was dead. Newman. And it is not at all unexpected that this would be the outcome. A doctor from a London hospital told the BBC that a typical surgery like Sullivan's, it takes about 40 minutes. Most patients walk out happy at 2 days. Walk out! Did you hear Mr. Surgeon from, Mr. Surgeon that talked to the BBC. Most patients walk out happy at 2 days. I can't wait to run in the living room and tell Agnes that her successful surgery was probably John Henry Newman's fault or to whatever. Morons. Of course, there is a lesson to this. Jen Phillips at Mother Jones notes, too bad one of Newman's miracles can't be curing someone of AIDS, especially in countries like South Africa, where 25% of all pregnant mothers have HIV. That's 25%. That's a quarter of the pregnant population. No miracle in the fact that the Vatican claims that condoms only make the African HIV-AIDS crisis worse. This is in the face of the undisputed fact that condoms reduce new infections by 80%. So just as Jen Phillips notes, that miracle will not be forthcoming from Holy Mother Church. Oof. But it is More End Monday on the Horn, and that's not all. I got a story. I got two stories. Two. It's just like a Certs commercial. Two. Two stories in one. Why do I still remember catchphrases from advertisements from 1972? Ding! With Redson. Now, I got two stories in one. One comes to us from Los Angeles, sort of via the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Al Jazeera and the LA Times and several other outlets reporting that a Saudi diplomat has reportedly sought political asylum in the United States. Why would he do this? Well, apparently the Saudi Kingdom, those enlightened despots there in the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, you know, you remember him. That's the one whose king George Bush was a kissing on the mouth on. Mm-hmm, that one. Well, despite being a culture where men kiss on the mouth all the time, they apparently don't think too highly of being gay. So that's a problem for Ali Ahmad Asari. Ali Ahmad Asari is, up until recently, he had a pretty nice job. He was a Saudi diplomat. He was the first secretary at the L.A. Secretariat or whatever it is. That the Saudis have in Los Angeles, you know, where they help arrange for little slave girls to go and work in Saudi homes. You do know that slavery still exists in the United States and that Saudis, rich Saudis, routinely keep slaves in their households, right? You're aware of that? Yeah, well, they do. But Ali Ahmad Asseri was terminated from his job after they discovered that he was gay. Yet don't ask, don't tell, Saudi style. But it gets worse. Not only was Ali Ahmad Asseri gay, he was also close friends with a Jewish woman. Which means it's probably a good thing this didn't transpire in Israel, because Ali Ahmad Asseri, for all of his gayness, might have been put in prison for raping the Jewish woman. You remember that story, right? Yeah, Asseri was first secretary of the Saudi consulate in Los Angeles. Asseri told NBC in an email message, "My life is in great danger here, and if I go back to Saudi Arabia, they will kill me openly in broad daylight." I don't think it's the time of day part that's bothering Mr. Asseri. No, what he means by that is they'll have a ceremony. They'll invite the neighbors. "Come and watch us kill the infidel homosexual who has a Jewish friend." And they'll be killing him as much, probably more for being gay than having the Jewish friend, but being gay and having a Jewish friend, Jesus, I mean, you know, we'll just call that snake eyes. At least in Saudi Arabia. So the poor bastard, who isn't poor, I'm sure, but the poor bastard has applied for asylum in the United States, and I still haven't found any follow-up on whether or not he's going to be granted asylum by the U.S., or whether we will do the Saudis' bidding and send him back so that they can chop off his penis and slice it in four parts and cut his head off and his hands and one toe at a time. You know, the kind of barbarity that they engage in at the upper crust levels of the Saudi civilization, and I use the term loosely because I don't like them. Now, that's different from saying I don't like Saudi people. I don't like their stinking monarchy. Because, among other things, they treat their ordinary... My God, the poor population in Saudi Arabia is absolutely the heartbreak. And they rely on a lot of de facto slave labor. Yeah. So there's that. Okay? Let's remember Ali Ahmad Asseri, who can't go home again because he loves people the wrong way, according to the Saudi kingdom. Right? Right. So we go from there to Von Ohr, V-O-N-O-R-E. I'm probably mispronouncing it. In Blount County, Tennessee. Yeah, granted, Tennessee was in the news again over the weekend because a couple of fundamentalist freaks decided to burn a Koran. The only people who came to watch the Koran burning were, of course, the idiot for-profit media who were giving this guy these clowns publicity. A couple of protesters stood outside on the front in the street. They were soldiers' kinfolk who didn't object to having their loved ones put in greater danger than they already are by a couple of fundamentalist freaks. But that's not the story out of Tennessee. No. The story out of Tennessee comes from Von Ohr. Vonnery? V-O-N-O-R-E. Von Ohr, Tennessee. Blount County. Story courtesy of the Daily Times, Blount, your 24/7 Blount County news source. And it was sent along to me by our dear friend Maura, who said, "Gee, Bob, look at this. Apparently they ran out of Korans to burn in Tennessee." Now, what could that possibly mean? Well, Carol Ann Stutt and her partner, Laura Stutt, are afraid to go back home to what's left of their Von Ohr home in Monroe County. And now, why would that be? Well, that's because after the word queers was spray-painted all over their garage, the lesbian couple then found that their home had been burned down.
Carol Stutt said on Friday, "We'd love to stay in the area, but we will never, never rebuild on that property again. I take someone with me constantly, one or two people, to make sure I'm okay while I'm up there." Now, the fire happened back on September the 4th, about 10 p.m. Detective Travis Jones says it is an arson, and we are continuing the investigation. There are people of interest in the case, which is at least a far cry from those Gomers in South Carolina who, when they found a man had been dragged to death and then shot or whatever it was, you recall the story, said, we're investigating the possibility that it might be a murder. Hooray for Tennessee. Hooray in particular for Detective Travis Jones of the Monroe County Sheriff's Department. It's an arson. Carol Stutt said there's nothing left of the place. They're calling it a black hole. Now, this isn't just some Janie-come-lately lesbian couple that they've been together for 16 years. They moved into their home in Vonore, 5 years ago and celebrated by going down to Nash Vegas to have a little fun. Carol Stutt has a daughter from a previous marriage, and she was going to stay home. Ma, I think I'll stay home. But she decided she'd go Carol and Laura to the big city and have a little fun. And that's why she's still alive. Because it was while they were gone to celebrate the five-year move-in at their house that the arsonists burned it to the ground. And this wasn't, something that it was a total mystery. Carol and Laura Stutt have been harassed and threatened for quite some time, for about the entire time they've been there, about 5 years, specifically by one neighbor. She said Carol Stutt said the last in-depth threats were several weeks ago. They tried to ignore the threats, but eventually they decided to at least file a report with the sheriff's office. Now, question. What do those two stories have in common? Let's see. It's a Muslim theocracy monarchy that wants to kill Mr. Ali Ahmad Asseri. And it is presumably Christian followers of the Prince of Peace who spray-painted queers on the Stutz home and then burned it to the ground real good. That's not it. No. One guy's a gay man and the other two are gay women. Oh, that might be a clue. Wonder. But no, I don't think so. I don't think so. No, Watson, I don't think so. No, the reason I've got these two stories grouped together is because they both victims are victims of fundamentalism. And to the best of my knowledge, and this is not trumpet tooting, to the best of my knowledge, I'm the only one of the very few people out there who are saying this. I know that Malloy and the Truth Seekers get it. He's drawn this line. But very few others, because most people, even liberal radio commentators, are afraid to touch religion. Well, I'm not. But it's not about Christianity. And it's not about Islam. It is fundamentalism. You'll recall that I got an email earlier in the evening from our good friend Marty, noting that Mercury is in retrograde. Well, the entire fundamentalist world is in retrograde motion. That Psychology Today blog post from back in March that I pointed out to you, confirms this. We are progressive, and the antonym of progressive is not conservative. The antonym of progressive, as our good friend Matt Osborne has pointed out, is regressive. Going backwards. And it and fundamentalism of all stripes in the religious world is essentially regressive. Muslim fundamentalists want to go back to a pure day of the caliphate or whatever it was, where the religion rules all facets of life and everybody's happy, happy, happy. Fundamentalists of the Protestant stripe want to go back to a regressive world where everybody lives by some code that they have that they will define on the fly, and everybody's happy, happy, happy. It's manifested in the Dominionist movement and the Christian Reconstructionist movement. Roman Catholic fundamentalists want to roll back everything that happened with Vatican II and Pope John the 23rd. And go back to a time when priests could screw the lights out of little boys, and little boys would answer, "Thank you, sir. May I? Thank you, Father. May I have another?" And witches were burned at the stake, and the definition of witches was sort of on an ad hoc basis, based upon who was annoying the church the most at the given time. It is fundamentalism that is fundamentally the problem. And that's why we can't wrap our heads around this in the United States, because we want to be all gingerly and sweet and put on the little kid gloves anytime we talk about stupid religion. For fear that we may offend the nice normal people, we won't talk about the freaks who are defining their religion for them. We have to say how so-and-so is not really a Christian. Yeah, Terry Jones, whatever. In fact, he is. We have to talk about how Fred Phelps and Shirley Phelps Roper aren't really Christians, when actually they are. They're just Christians of a particular stripe. We have to talk about how Osama bin Laden isn't really a Muslim, when he really is. How the Wahhabi freaks in Saudi Arabia who would like to chop Ali Ahmad Asari into teensy-tiny pieces and torment every last piece for being a dirty, dirty, dirty homosexual as not really good Muslims when they are. But apart from being Muslim or Muslim or Jewish or Christian, it's that fundamentalist stripe that makes it unbearable for anyone who isn't one of them. And interestingly, while occasionally Buddhists will get uppity and violent, and occasionally Hindus will get uppity and violent, and I guess your last remaining vestiges of Zoroastrians can get kind of uppity and violent. Anybody can, because we are, after all, still human at the bottom of it all, and we've still got some pretty lizard brain stuff going on inside our little hominid noggins. Ultimately, we have to look to what it is that empowers that lizard brain. And fundamentalism does that. Because fundamentalism, first and foremost, shuts down any recourse to reason. Fundamentalism demands that, in the Christian context, that their adherents believe that humans lived with dinosaurs, that the earth was created in 7 days, that it's only 4,000 or 5,000 years old, you know, just a few days short of the actual verifiable age of the first recipe for beer, for God's sakes. You got to believe all kinds of insane crap to be a fundamentalist monotheist. And it's always the monotheists, isn't it? Our God is a good God. That's why a plague struck down 30 people. That's why we prayed that plague down on them, because our God is so good. You can make the argument that humanity and civilization, and this is of fairly recent vintage, really did start going in the wrong direction when we veered off on the monotheistic road. Who was it? Akhenaten in Egypt tried it. Didn't play well. Didn't work. The Romans had their supreme god, Jupiter Optimus Maximus. But he wasn't the only god. And they had lots of other interesting ones, like the Furies. Now, by God, the Furies? There's some gods I can believe in. Don't even have corporeal form. They just screw with you when they feel. But monotheism bundles them up and says, oh, no, this is him, and, you know, it's all there is. Your tree gods and your rock gods and your river gods and your dryads and hamadryads and naiads, demons, all demons. And so to get down with all of that, you got to get down and dirty with the fundamentalists. And sooner or later, if you get down and dirty with the fundamentalists, you're going to get all coated in the filth, and you're going to find yourself saying, well, you know, maybe Ali Ahmad Asiri does need to be chopped into a million tiny pieces in the town square in Riyadh for not loving people the way that God, our one good, loving, merciful God, says you got to be loving. Sooner or later, you look up and you go, you know what? Maybe those stut women really did need to be burned out of their house in Tennessee. Because, you know, of our one God done said about how, but you know what? He didn't. Not a word. Of course, none of them have ever said a word. They've never done back surgery either. I guess we're just kind of weaving a little bit of prayer meeting Wednesday into this as well. Because I won't be here Wednesday. Same, same. Chop up the gay man, burn the gay women out. Same, same. Christians, Muslims, same, same. Because what they have in common is fundamentalism. And fundamentalism is evil, and fundamentalism is wicked, and fundamentalism is hateful. And it is very much the recipe for the end of humanity as we understand it. When I think about fundamentalism, I get the fan tods. Really, I do. Because it's just... Look, you know, there are still, like I said, elements of it within the church. But look what we lost out of the Roman Empire because of early church fundamentalism. We lost vast amounts of accumulated transgenerational wisdom. Because some barely literate freak in a dress said that it was heresy. Right? Yeah. We lost art. We lost architecture. We lost medicine. We lost science. We lost literature. And you know what? Here's a little secret. While it was happening to Christianity, the Christian Europe, it was happening in the Muslim world too. The genius of Islam, the flowering of mathematics and science, it was all swamped in a wave of simplistic fundamentalism. And both of them were drenched in blood. And they are all, every last one of them, morons. Oh, and I got more morons. I got morons. Really, I'm up to my armpits. One last moron before the break. One last nomination, if you will. This one goes out to Massey Energy Chief Counsel Shane Harvey, General Counsel of Massey Energy, Shane Harvey. A story came out this week about the ongoing investigation of the Upper Big Branch disaster here in West Virginia that occurred on April 5th, the day after Easter, when 29 miners were lost their lives in a needless exercise in profiteering and capitalism run wild. It turns out that they kept a notebook of stuff that needed to be fixed underground. And as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request by the Associated Press, that notebook has been made public. In a logbook maintained at Upper Big Branch, it turns out that three conveyor belts needed to be sprinkled with pulverized stone, rock dust, to cover up a layer of combustible coal dust and thereby reduce the manifest danger that the coal dust poses. Those three conveyor belts were miles long. And when coal dust begins to coat things in a coal mine, disaster is not far away. So Michael Elswick picked up the phone and called a colleague on the surface and said, "You need to put in the logbook that we've got to rock dust the conveyor belts because they're all covered in coal dust." 32 minutes later, Michael Elswick and 28 of his fellows underground were dead because the mine blew up. On the day of the explosion, Elswick's co-worker Scott Halstead reported problems with five of the six belts he inspected. More than 3 miles of belts in that Massey death trap. Elswick and Halstead and others had been making the same reports for months on end, noting that vast areas, according to the AP story, vast areas of the mine needed rock dusting. But that's okay, according to Shane Harvey, Moran nominee, and general counsel for Massey Energy. That's okay. Because what it... What it says isn't, according to Shane Harvey, isn't what it says. No, not at all. Shane Harvey, general counsel for Massey Energy, said that, well, you know, those things in the logbook, those are just observations. And it's sort of like it's more of a, well, it's a reminder. It's not really a cause for concern. It's just a reminder. This is the quote. You make a notation of it so that it gets done. And the fact that a notation was made doesn't mean it was a problem. That's the way the company looks at it. You know, just like you'd make notations, at least, you know, mental notations, to vacuum your floor. Swab toilet bowl, do laundry, take out trash, vacuum floor. You know, just like that. There's only one difference. If you make that mental notation, or maybe you're obsessive compulsive and you write it down. If you do that and you don't get around to the vacuuming, your house might get a little messy. Maybe the carpets will look a little dingy. But 29 people aren't going to die, are they? But for the soulless, arguably sociopathic Shane Harvey, general counsel of Massey Energy, noting that rock dust needs to be put on layers of coal dust that continue to accumulate inside along 3 miles of conveyor belt lines deep in the earth, that's just like trying to remember to vacuum. Who remembers to vacuum? You know, it's only when company's coming. When company's coming, that's called having an MSHA inspector. Right. I mean, it's just like making notes about housekeeping. I mean, we've got houses all over West Virginia just blow up every day because somebody forgot to do the vacuuming. See, that coal dust catches fire. Explosively. That's why when you're using coal to create electricity in a coal-fired power plant, you grind it down to what? Dust. Yes. And then you blow it into the fire and it, boom. Sure. But, you know, no, pay no attention. This isn't anything. The coal dust has nothing to do with a mine blowing up, says Shane Harvey. It's just like vacuuming your house. Doesn't really mean anything. Shane Harvey. Moran. Evil. Moran. Hateful. Moran. Deadly Moran. And this is Moran Monday on the Horn. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333.
Like a castle in its corner, in a meeting. work no more. I'm a fool to do your dirty work. Oh,
thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine minutes past the hour, I couldn't resist running that classic Steely Dan track. You know, that line in there about how you sent the maid home early like a thousand times before. Kind of sounds like Massey, doesn't it? I'm afraid to do. I won't do your Massey work no more. See where I see that a little peek inside the workings of the mind of Bob. It's not a place you want to go very often. Trust me, I live there. It's a tough neighborhood, really. It is. It's 10 minutes past the hour, and before we go to the phones, the lines of which are largely open. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Before we do that, a couple of emails. I mentioned, I generically said that Kate's out on the road, and she kindly provided me with, not GPS, but with location. And regarding the miracle, the back surgery miracle in turning what's his face John Henry Newman into a saint. Kate says, I used to pay good money to get that kind of spiritual experience.
Well, I didn't always pay. He prescribed some very, very good narcotics. And she said, P.S., clarifying my location, I decided to stay in Helena. Funding dried up for Katrina relief in Mississippi, and I can't breathe in the oil fumes in New Orleans. The criteria for choosing Helena? God, we are a special bunch, aren't we? The criteria for choosing Helena? The local IGA has Nancy's yogurt. Yum. Yum. And that's a good enough reason. I don't know if it's a good enough reason to stay in Helena when the snow's 11 feet deep or however. I don't know. I've never been up there. I just know. There's just this line I draw across the country that goes, it's too damn cold for me to go to. Sorry. Ron writing in from Raleigh says, Shane Harvey seems to be cut from the same cloth as the venal swine that represented the tobacco industry, the chemical industry, et al. Where do these evil swine come from who can endanger their fellow humans and accept payment to do so? Oh, that's right, says Ron. They're Republicans! Why, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, they are. And Jim, offering some thoughts, he says, with all due respect, I have my own problems with the church. However, what may be your superstition is another man's religion, not deserving ridicule. I know where you're coming from, Jim says. AIDS, no usage of condoms, etc., and other errors made by the Vatican and other faiths. Yet there are many good Christians and followers of other faiths. It is most unfortunate that the good are judged with the bad. And thanks for your wishes for the good trip, Jim. And it is unfortunate. But I'll say this much. It's not my fault that they are. Because you know what? I'm going to take the same tactic that the right wing is so fond of taking. Why don't they do more to denounce them? Why don't they get in their faces? Some do. Not many. Here's a classic example of it from Amarillo, Texas this weekend. A beautiful little moment. The best good news of the entire day. What's this freak's name? I'll find it there. David Grisham leads a group that we've talked about on this program called Repent Amarillo. And they go and torment people. They've gotten people fired from their jobs. They've spied on the gatherings of so-called swingers. People who aren't all hung up about sexuality and yada, yada. They take pictures of people's license plates at strip joints. You know, they're violent. Well, he was going to have him a Koran burning in Amarillo. And what I said about getting, you know what? Of all the people to get out there and get in their faces, you know who did? The Unitarians. God bless them. Dog bless them. Flying spaghetti monster bless them. The Unitarians in Amarillo gathered together people of all faiths and no faiths and stood up to that thug-ass bastard David Grisham as he was trying to burn a Quran. Making clear that David Grisham was nothing that they would respect as a follower of any responsible faith. And as David Grisham stood there prattling, prating away about it, he's going to burn the evil book because their God's not as big as our God, even though it's the same darn God. All gods being imaginary, of course. In the middle of the blabbing, a skateboarder by the name of Jacob Isom. Jacob Isom's 23 years old, and in the middle of David Grisham babbling away about the evils of the Islam, got himself kind of distracted while he was arguing with some of the in-your-face Unitarians. God bless him, dog bless him, something bless him, or nothing. Well, that's when Jacob Isom snuck up and snatched the Quran. And so when David Grisham said, "And this Quran," Jacob Isom said to him, "You have no Quran," and walked over and put it into the hands of an imam. You know, it would be nice if the Muslim world would at least be aware of that story. That would be nice. Shucks, I mean, you know, the Catholic Church can turn a guy into a saint for doing nothing more than being dead while a man had a successful surgery. Maybe Islam could elevate this guy to some real sainthood for protecting their holy book. It was kind of a beautiful thing. That's one of those moments when you realize that maybe we're not as in trouble with the next generation as conservatives would like to think and say we are. And I haven't even gotten around to Newt Gingrich, and maybe I won't. Just one question. Why was Robert Gibbs dignifying Newt Gingrich's weird-ass remarks No. Just asking. John writing in from New York. Regarding Kate's note, hell yeah, Nancy's yogurt's enough reason to stay in Montana. Especially if you can get your hands on some granola and fresh peaches to stir in. Oh, fresh peaches. Threw out the TV, ate a lot of peaches. There we go. And so enough of everything. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Kenzo, greetings. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, Spike?
Not much. I had to reluctantly take a night off from class. I'm not feeling well, so I figured why not enjoy a little Moran talk.
Well, we got him by the boatload tonight.
America is the fleet of boats of Morans. That's why AM talk radio is the way it is. But real quick, you mentioned Unitarians. I looked up the Wikipedia of people who are listed as notable Unitarians. And it's an interesting assortment of people from Thomas Jefferson, both of the Adams, Millard Fillmore, Howard Taft, to Susan B. Anthony, Florence Nightingale, Ralph Waldo Emerson. So I guess if you have a list of people you can claim like that, it might not be a shock that you would stand up to religious fundamentalist wackos like that group up in Amarillo, the hometown of Terry Funk, a professional wrestler who's one of the goons in Roadhouse. It's probably the most famous person I can think of to associate with Amarillo.
Yeah, I went to college the first couple of years with a kid from Amarillo. That's about as close as I can get.
Yeah, it's that's real, real redneck Texas country up there. And I find it interesting, you know, that there's such right-wingers, that church, and yet, you know, it's interesting in the world of bondage how many of the submissives are Republicans, I might add.
Oh, yes, Zoot, naughty Zoot, she shall have to have a spanking.
Very interesting, the vast majority of the women that are into doing that, for the most part, almost all conservatives. That should explain a lot there, right there. It makes me look forward to my psychology class. I think I'm going to enjoy that very much. Geez, you know, we have an election coming up. And what the hell is the news cycle even on anymore? Yeah, we went to covering lots of religious bigots to religious fanatics. And it seems like they kind of shot their religious, you know what? And now what are we? What is anyone even talking about anymore in this country that's even relevant to this upcoming election? It seems I question just how uneducated the public's going to be heading into this election, and how few people might be voting when it's such an important time now, more than ever. You know, last year, no one showed up to the election because it was like, Obama's in office, so all the Democrats stayed home. And the teabaggers won tons of local things, which kind of made them think they were legit now, and not, you know, looking at the political science reality of you showed up on an off-election year, When you show up to an election where no one votes, it's much easier to get in, like me with my one vote into a committee man position.
I still love that.
Yeah. I just wrote my name in as a smartass and got into office. Still the shock of the day when the letter came from the county board of elections that I was in a tie for the office. And as it turned out, the other person really didn't think he had a chance of getting picked and had no interest. So, but in the same, that's sad that I could do that. It was a big Democratic primary. It was Sestak versus Specter. And no one showed up. I mean, that was an important one to show up to in the primary process.
You would think, yes.
This isn't the year where you have the guy who's a shoo-in, you know, to get re-elected. And we even had weird people in the primaries in the Democratic ticket. They were, you know, they was a teabagger against Kanjorski. They wasn't a liberal, but they was a teabagger against him, which should probably explain when I said before, you know, with the difference between him and Lou Barletta. Like, if I have to settle for someone who's going to do the bidding of Wall Street, let me at least go with the one who's not going to scapegoat people on racial prejudices.
Right.
Because unfortunately, it's not like this is great liberal country out here in the Poconos for the most part.
No.
In this congressional district, I should say. In this area, yes. But unfortunately, we're just one of several counties in that congressional district. So, you know, we can get liberals elected to office in my county, but we're going to have a harder time getting Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and Hazleton to kind of join in the fun. There's a reason that the office is based in Scranton. If you want to look at...
Oh, my favorite Scranton reference comes from the great 1978 comedy with Peter Falk and Alan Arkin, the in-laws.
Oh, okay.
When Alan Arkin declares, "It's over the ocean to Scranton, Pennsylvania?" That's every time I hear Scranton, I think of that.
Well, they was also all in the family. Edith had a cousin in Scranton.
Yeah.
And... So I guess Edith could have been Hillary Clinton. I couldn't believe I couldn't think of her name for a second. I could see her face. Because, you know, Hillary Clinton's, like, loosely connected to Scranton. My favorite Scranton reference actually comes from the movie Kingpin when Woody Harrelson comes out of the place where he was living, and he sees his neighbor, and he asks his neighbor, "How's life?" And his neighbor just answers, "Taken forever." I kind of sum.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Kingpin to me, and I just hear, "Goodbye, Brother Munson. Goodbye, whore."
Or the giant shit cloud.
Yeah, great movie that. I need to go rewatch that.
Yeah, well, that's especially funny being from Pennsylvania and seeing how they really took some very vast liberties with geography of Pennsylvania between Amish country and Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, see, there's another thing. You know, I think back to the first story, the medical miracle that got Cardinal John Henry Newman beatified, and I can't help but thinking, you know, looking to the Vatican for medical advice, isn't that a little bit like looking to the Amish for NASCAR advice?
Yeah, I just saw that article, today. pretty accurate comparison. Although, actually, arguably, the Amish are much closer to the world of NASCAR, probably, in thinking, than the world of, like, F1 or IndyCar, where it's more advanced technology. NASCAR is almost the automotive horse and buggy series out there. They're still using carburetors and four speeds and very, very dated technologically speaking compared to other series out there, which might explain why they do have that core, again, of a conservative audience who's kind of set in their ways and they don't want to be, you know, re-educated any other way. Although really conservative in its core is to keep the status quo and the richest and most powerful in power. That's really what being a conservative is, which puzzles me why there's so many middle and lower class conservatives in this country. I've never understood why someone who works for a living or is poor thinks that keeping the rich in charge has really benefited them when they have crap to show for it. That's just me occasionally using that thing between my ears and my giant Irish head taking up all that room. I have a 62 and a half centimeter head, 7 7/8 hat size. So, you know, maybe I got two.
Damnation! That's nearly a colossal Roman statue head, isn't it?
Well, at least big enough to be a float in the Macy's parade at this point. And by the way, the bigger your head is, the more likely you are to bang it into things throughout your life. So I've bumped my fair share of cars getting in and out of them, especially sports cars, which at one time I raced and was frequently banging my head. But I just have this feeling, I'm really jumping tracks here, that in the next 10 days, because I remember in 2008, it was the 18th, I do believe, or maybe it was, I think it was the 18th when the economy really took a crash around the world. And we're about at that point in the world of economics where everyone's going to start saying what they made for a quarter. A lot of predictions going towards the next year going. So this is kind of panic season's about to start in the world of economics. And I just have this bad feeling that in the next few days, we're going to get a lot of bad news stories, which we were kind of asleep at the wheel in 2008 for. And somehow I think we're even further asleep at the wheel as a country, as a culture of not paying attention to what goes on. Everyone, oh, politics sucks. Everything sucks in life. Oh, I'm not going to pay attention anymore. I don't see how that solves anything. Like people who would brag that to protest the system, they don't vote. Well, that just keeps the same people in charge. I think we have some bad news coming in the next few weeks. Basically, my advice, and I'm not an economic expert, but my advice is if anyone's got a lot of money in the stock market, you might want to sell tomorrow while you still can. I just think the cycle's about to hit hard again, and we're going to take it on the chin again. And sadly, no changes have been really made to anything that goes on since 2008. I mean, I'll admit, my congressman did a terrible job, really, with 08. The doomsday scenario he painted for us bothers me that that's basically the only thinking that's going on at this point to handle these matters. Granted, the government had to step in and prevent a collapse, which didn't happen in the Great Depression. So I understand that, obviously I'm not an Ayn Rand nut. I understand at that point, that's why we paid taxes for more than just printing money and going to war. The government's supposed to help us in many ways, paving the roads, building the bridges, something we've been neglecting for eons. It also means we are not going to let, FDR didn't want to let this country's economy collapse, like it did because there was nothing to safeguard it. And most of America for many decades believed in that, and somehow they've been bamboozled ultimately by believing any rich person you hear on TV and radio that this is a bad thing, not taking into account how much are these people worth that are telling us that, we should just let the rich rule. And I honestly think that with nothing having changed, and essentially the money we've handed out is kind of starting to run out. Our road project galore going on here in Pennsylvania, every stretch of highway under work right now. A lot of it's about to run out of funds if we don't get more from Washington. I think the bottom is about to refall out again. And maybe in many places it will be by design for cheap political reasons. I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to say overall it's all that. But I think as long as we keep putting our fingers in our ears, sticking our tongues out, and making like we don't hear.
La, 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 la.
Right. Yeah, as long as we ignore the fact that nothing has changed, it's still the same kind of winner-take-all system, the same system that... Let me even explain it to the people like this. Japan is a very big capitalist country, maybe more so than we are, but at least there... greed hasn't truly taken over. Actually, matter of fact, anytime you find a Japanese company that's done bad, it's very often their North American operations run by Americans. Because there's pride. There's no pride in America. It's all about, give me mine. Me, me, me. We're the nation of me. When you go to Japan, everyone, they work anytime the company calls and stuff like that, but in the end, they're rewarded for that. And in the very same...
Robert from Japan might take issue with you on that, but... Because Japan has worked itself to death.
Yeah, well,
and now they're getting shipped to China. Their stuff's getting shipped to China.
But in the same, it hasn't been as ridiculously over the top, it seems, as the American system of trying to take as much as they can for themselves and run with the money. I mean, because there's no shame in the people who run the companies here. At least there, they might still be people who would feel shame. I think that we're shameless in that, you know, it's all about money. And people in this country will sell any, they'll pitch any product if you pay them. Ben Stein with that scam website. Oh, they're giving me money. What's wrong with that? They're ripping people off. It's a con game. It's like a three-card Monty dealer giving you money. I think that's the problem, is just there's no dignity in this country. Everyone is a whore to capitalism in this country. I think,
well, they are. Yeah, I don't. It's not always by choice, Spike. I think people are rendered that way. Where's the refuge from it? Where can you go that you aren't getting prostituted out to the capitalist miracle? I mean, at least capitalism as defined by the Milton Friedmans of the world, isn't it predicated upon just squeezing every last drop of blood out of every last worker until they collapse as completely just evacuated husks until you can do it to the next generation? Isn't that the whole purpose of it?
Well, maybe even better example. You know, there's plenty of capitalism in Canada. But it's
regulated. This is disaster capitalism. This is predatory capitalism. This is not even capitalism. This is Ayn Randian psychotic sociopathy in writ large.
The problem is because there's no pride in this country, there's no courage to just simply go out and push for the regulation. You know, if the people actually had the courage to believe in the regulation, it would happen. Anything can happen if people just go out and make it happen by voting. Go out and make it happen by writing your senators and congressmen. But no one does. It just boggles my mind. Why are we the only industrialized education? Well, we were educated at one time. I think we're very lacking at this point, but we're an industrialized nation. We're not a third world nation. This isn't Central America. This isn't.
No, but we're working on it.
Banana Republic. But yet we seem to be on the same level as them on many, many issues. Haiti was a country that didn't believe in government intervention on things like regulations on businesses and all sorts of things. And how did that country do when the earth shook? You know, if you think that the free market's going to take care of anything, I got a bridge in Brooklyn for sale.
The free market takes care of itself.
Well, only the richest in the free market actually truly take care of themselves. Everyone else has to, you know.
There's a larger point there, and that is the market, qua the market, has its primary interests in seeing to its own. It doesn't matter who you are or what you are, the market can largely chew you up and spit you out. It chews up more workers and spits out more workers, Spike, because there are more workers than there are megalomaniacal millionaires.
Right, and so now there's more workers than there are jobs, so they can really lower the bar, much like a company I used to patronize, the Dr. Pepper Snapple Corporation, who they lost my business with what was going on. And again, I mean, the absurdity of, well, in other markets, yeah, okay, that's great for you. In other markets, it's cheaper. At least if you're going to be a Scrooge about it, at least have the courtesy to move to that market. Don't just tell people, oh, we're gonna, because these idiots down in an uneducated part of the world with three teeth in their mouth think this is a good wage. That's what we think we should give you, even though the cost of living here is significantly higher.
No, I don't think we're necessarily disagreeing. But what I think needs to be made abundantly clear is that in this country, the goal of the predators now is to create that atmosphere where the workers have three teeth in their mouth and think, well, 30 cents a day, all right.
Hey. Well,
the right wing has resented the existence of a middle class for as long as there has been one.
Right. Well, because obviously the middle class threatens the status quo. Because there is always some sort of a struggle between the two in a way. You know, the wealthiest want the middle class to just submit to them and, you know, do what they need.
The middle class, as soon as there began to be a middle class, especially through the economic expansion of the Eisenhower years and up into the Kennedy years, and you know, before we flushed it all away with our stupidity in Vietnam and whatnot, I don't know if people realize this or not, but the middle class was used by the predatory class, and I feel like, you know, we're in full-blown Marxism because everything is class. Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again. But what the predatory class did was they used the middle class as their equity for their future designs, okay? And what I mean by that is the predatory class allowed the middle class to sock away some of its wealth there in its little middle class lives. And then whenever the predatory class feels like it, they come and soak them. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening now. And for anybody to be surprised, I think is, bumper stickerism. If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention, right? But I got to roll on, yeah. Spike. How'd your fish do yesterday?
Oh, the Dolphins. They won in an ugly game. They're not a very good team, I guess. Luckily, the Bills.
Yeah, and they cut Pat White too.
Yeah, they did all kinds of things that didn't make sense. I don't know why they didn't use Ricky Williams more early in the game as well. It's a guy that's highly underrated on many levels, Ricky Williams, one of the more interesting football players. But they won, which is good, starting off the season with a win, hoping the Jets don't. But
So you're a Ravens fan tonight?
Well, for tonight, yes. Yeah. For two reasons. One, they're playing the Jets, and two, I'm using their defense in fantasy football in the game I'm winning, so I kind of need them to push me over to top.
Now you got Ray Ray.
We got the murderer we got. But to be honest with you, I'm paying more attention to baseball. It's a little more exciting for me as a Phillies fan. But by the way.
Yeah, this one's coming down to the wire in the NL East.
They're going to start to take off with it, I think, because they're going to play the Braves soon. And the Braves have Billy Wagner as their closer. Billy Wagner's great at blowing games against teams he used to pitch for as a closer. He did it when the Phillies had him against Houston in 05. He blew two games in Philly. That year, the Phillies missed the playoffs by one game to the Houston Astros. Then in 07, he blew a bunch of games to the Phillies when he was with the Mets in 07. Was one of many factors leading to the big collapse of that Mets team. He had many blown games late in that stretch. And I think he'll do it again because he's a guy who he'll be lights out when he's pitching against the worst team in baseball. Put him in a pressure situation. He always chokes. And the Phillies know that very well. So this is going to be exciting baseball coming down the stretch. Not to mention, since I'm an insomniac, I'm even following as best as I can since I have limited skills in reading Japanese, but Japanese professional baseball. I can basically show you all the Japanese text of the names of the teams, but from there my Japanese falls off pretty quick.
Well, Spike, have a great evening.
All right, you too.
Later now. Bye. Calling from Eastern PA, that's our buddy Spike. And I've just heard in with the mention of Japan. I thought we had a pretty good chance of conjuring some commentary. Ron noting, Bob, remember, Mr. Honda has never made more than 50 times an assembly line worker. Naked greed doesn't seem to be as rampant in Japan despite their adherence to capitalist principles. And Ron notes, by the way, I'm temporarily working at a Christian women's college. I ran across a GM Tahoe SUV in the faculty parking lot with a Who is John Galt sticker in the window. Chilling, ain't it? More than. And somebody, and I'm sure whoever has that sticker thinks they're terribly profound for having it. Let's continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so...
You scared the devil out of me with those two emails.
Listen, I'm sorry. That presentation just sort of destroyed me. I'm like, good Jesus. Just because this is what this, you know, these people believe that is something that we should be looking forward to. And I'm thinking, that dystopia is really frightening. And the guy was so enthusiastic about it that it all make us behave in the end. I'm like, hello.
Good little Germans.
No, but wasn't it just bizarre?
Well, and the second one, and these are things related to information technology and the future of information technology that Sandra has emailed me over the last couple of days. The second one you sent me, the one that I got today about smart license plates.
Yeah, right.
That will beam advertisements onto the backs of cars, the back glass, or, you know, where other people can see. You know, the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that, Sandra, was that when we get to the point where we're doing it, and bear in mind, you know, if somebody decides that we want it, we'll have it. You know what I mean? They're not going to stop that. Eventually, it will, you know, we'll have RFID imprinted or inserted, whatever, the license plates. And the world, and the world we live in, when we have that, is going to be, more than anything, it's going to look like, it's going to look like Blade Runner.
Going to be yet another cover over, you know, because the one interesting thing that I have been learning during this program I'm doing is with technology, you know, you're competing against millions of years of evolution for humans, and they haven't caught up. You know, we're still responding to our environment as we did, you know, in our infancy, which I think is really interesting kind of, you know, thing to keep in mind, which is why, believe it or not, when you design usability for people going online and stuff, you know, you have to deal in terms of a gossip type tree. I mean, it's fascinating, but it also is really creepy to me. You understand what I'm saying?
Because
I'm like, you know, because I'm talking to these people, they're all enthusiastic, and I'm sitting here thinking, wow, this is, it ain't your grandpa's librarian, okay? Let's just
no, I just love the idea of being able to, that sometime in the future, some unsuspecting soul is going to walk up to the reference desk and get librarian Sandra.
Anyway, you know, but it's just kind of, the thing about the whole profession is that it's just sort of caught up in this whole internet business, which, you know, because they had claimed that, oh, the age of the librarian is over with. But, of course, it's not, because people don't know what the hell they're doing with all this information. So it's even more fascinating. But that's not really, you know, it's kind of an inside joke, I guess, now the way we're talking. But I just thought I'd share that one video with you, because the connections that you can make between all this and who called just now? Was that Spike?
Yeah, that was Spike.
Yeah, and the whole, you know, you have to throw in the state of our economy, because, see, my thing is that I think all this technology will be used to contain this permanent slow economy that we have.
Right, and to pacify the proles.
Right, and you know, and it's sort of, people always talk about 1984, but it could be more Huxley.
Well, you know, while we're working futuristic visions, I started out with Blade Runner. You went 1984. I'll see your 1984 and Aldous Huxley, and I'll up you a and I'll raise you a Soylent Green. Because if you remember that movie, yes, the upper crust all sit in really goofy postmodern designed the chairs a la Woody Allen's Sleeper and the furniture in 2001, yes. But there's lots of high technology in that movie, and at the same time, there is crushing starvation on the streets where people are getting by on crackers.
Well, no. I mean, the thing you have to remember, when you hear some freak like that presentation being all excited about adapting gaming to everyday life, he talks as if no one's pulling the string. You know, someone's going to be, you know, this is not going to be just some entrepreneur on every corner coming up with something. Come on. You know, there's going to be something, entities controlling this. And this is the issue that you should have with it. I mean, looking at a Coke can talking to you is bad enough. You understand what I'm saying? But understanding...
Open me. You're thirsty for the real thing.
No, understanding what is behind it. And as you can listen to that presentation, you know there's people who are like, oh, that'll be great in this country. You see what I'm saying? The same people who are gaga for Lady Gaga, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Those types, and there's millions of us who are like in that mode. And I just, you know, technology is, yeah, it's kind of problematic when you have such severe social problems. You know what I mean?
It's symptomatic of a culture that can no longer tolerate a middle. Everything has to gravitate toward it. It's like the reverse image of an hourglass where it's all neck and everything gathers on two ends.
Yeah, I don't know. And the thing that really disturbed me about the whole and I listened to that guy even though I was freaked out. But the one thing he said that really freaked me out was how cheap the technology is. And that just sticks with me. It's like, I'd be goddamn. You know what I'm saying? We're all celebrating technology as it grows and changes. But when you start talking about the affordability of it, wow, you know, it's like, oh, shit. You know, it's so cheap that it can just be utilized like that. And that's scary to me.
And, you know, it's all around us. The second article you sent me talks about how the RFID, because it's all predicated on the fact that this stuff was offered as a, gee, come on, let's do it in the California legislature this past year.
Yeah, there's pushback on it, but it got a foothold in it, and that's what people are worried about. You know, you always have somebody willing to run a test, like they're testing the chips on Head Start kids. You know about this, right?
Yeah.
Where they have, you know, have some way of, you know, we want to just keep track of your kids. It's like, huh? And it's, you know, a grant from the stimulus money that's running.
And, you know, I remember when our babies were all little, Sandra, and Agnes and I had this detailed, in-depth conversation because, you know, you go to the county fair or the local town festival and the state police were always there. Let us fingerprint your children.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking at Agnes going, oh, hell no. Because they will not keep that database separate. I mean, once they're there, no. And then then the next year they were there with, here, swab the inside of your child's cheek with this Q-tip and we'll have their DNA on file.
Are you serious?
I'm not lying. This was 10 years ago.
Oh, no. See, that's the thing. You can't let the state, you know, I mean, the Bill of Rights, you know, for whatever. I mean, there's a reason for it, you see, and the way it's just being sort of dismissed. It's freaking me out. That license plate stuff, come on, man. I don't even have, you know, we have all these bridges in the Bay Area, right?
Right.
So when you live there, you can get a fast track so you can just go through it. But it involves you putting a transponder on your damn car. Now, that's fine, but listen to this. Court cases recently where they've utilized that transponder and they've like sued people, busted people, infidelity.
Right.
Hello? I thought it was just across the bridge. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And it, there's more to it than meets the eye because modern automobiles are also equipped with a little processor in the car that, you know, like a black box on the, black box on an aircraft. And it's been used to convict people and it's turning out that the boxes are unreliable.
Right. As usual, just like, you know, just, I don't care. I might rub people the wrong way. But this DNA business, don't put all your eggs in one basket. That shit is also dubious, they're finding.
Sure it is.
And, you know, ain't nobody swabbing nobody at a fair, though. I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on that.
I'm surprised it hadn't got, no, that happens all the time around here.
No, listen, I'm forever, you know, with the little.
You know, I reached out, come here, lassie. Yeah, here you go, officer.
Oh, no, I'm forever, you know, fish-eyeing what's going on with, you know, my little nieces because, yeah, they're forever trying to experiment on children in their little schemes and machinations. And it's like, no, find some other darkies. You know what I'm saying? the ones. And so, yeah. But it's.
I'm so not going to make the Star Wars reference about these are not the. No, no. You can't make me, Sandra. It would be easy.
Oh, man. Hey, listen. Anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed those things. You know, because I try to stay away from the RF, you know, all that stuff, because it really freaks me out. I'm not on Facebook. I don't do all that. So I'm a bit of a Ned Ludd, you know, I'm a bit of a Luddite, but I swear to God, you know, I think I should stick with it because this shit is freaky.
It'll make it, after a while, I'll form a coherent sentence in just a minute, Sandra. I ran across a story in the New York Times this weekend about a dead science fiction writer named Froggy something. And the guy had this whole mysterious persona he'd built up around himself. You know, he was one of these guys that lived in a one bedroom efficiency somewhere in Bensonhurst, and
yeah.
and everything was stacked up in newsletters and rejection letters. And he was a respected science fiction author. And apparently he burned himself to death inside his own apartment. And I'm reading, and he's creating these pictures of a very dire, spooky future. And then I get down through the article and I say, and so and so, comma, a devoted hardcore right winger. And suddenly it was over for him. Well, of course he went nuts. Because he was looking at a future that scares ordinary people to death. It must have had him absolutely in a fit.
And he just had his apartment caught on fire and he burned up?
No, he burned his apartment up with him in it.
Oh, okay. Oh, what, it's just like saying goodnight?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
It was in the New York Times this weekend. It would be, I don't have a link anymore, but it's worth going and having a look. It was a fascinating story. But I sat there reading it, and you know, that's often the case, especially with science fiction writers, that they're not well people. You know, yeah, there's Isaac Asimov. Yeah, there was Arthur Clarke. Yeah, Robert Heinlein, so forth and so on. They, you know, they got to the absolute pinnacle of their profession. But then there are these guys that write these futuristic visions that are scarier than any of us want to recognize, and they wind up going nuts when they see it happening. There's case after case after case of it.
Well, I mean, look at Orwell, what happened to his ass, you know, and he was pretty, you know, I mean, he went crazy too, didn't he?
Yeah.
See, at the end of the
day. And by the way, Ron in Raleigh just dropped in a note, and he said, "Hello, this is OnStar." And he said, "Do you really believe that OnStar is just there to unlock your damn doors?"
Oh, no. Who did? Who just sent that?
Ron in Raleigh.
No, see, that's another one of my pet peeves. Me and this one of my professors, yeah, we went off the deep end talking about OnStar. All that stuff is so bizarre. Have you heard some of the commercials? "Help, I've had a wreck, my leg." You know, have you heard them?
Oh, yeah. This is an actual OnStar call.
And it's like, you know, this one poor lady, I got hit by a bus. I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? Are you selling your product? What's happening?
And I don't want anything to do with it. I'd like to figure out a way if I'm ever going to buy a new car, to get in there and get that stupid little black box out of there, too.
Oh, yeah, no, all of it. I mean, it's just, and the thing, the way people embrace it, because they think, oh, anything that's going to keep me safe. I mean, I'll give up anything. I just need to be safe. You know, the Muslims, I got to be safe. You see what I mean?
What was the movie where Will Smith found himself running around with a crazied out techno spy played by Gene Hackman?
Oh.
Yeah, and he said, "I told you not to use the phone."
Yeah, that's the Enemy of the State.
Yeah, that one, yeah. That one.
Yeah, I saw that movie, actually. Yep, yep.
Yeah, see, the first thing, my cell phone? Nope. Goodbye, GPS. Off.
Well, no, I'm on, you know, I got a cell phone that is, it's just some sort of, I swear it's 1999, my phone, but I can't do it. I can't upgrade. I don't care. Now, my computer is a whole different story. That's all great. But I'm just not feeling it. I'm not feeling being available and accessible 24/7. I will leave the phone. I'll just disappear. people freaking out on me. I'm like, hello, deal with it. You know what I mean? I can't do it.
Is it just a coincidence that all of this technological ability to keep an eye on us comes along right at about the same time that the great demographic shift away from pale and pink is about to get more and more profound in this country?
You know, listen, all we do on this show is connect the dots. So if we throw in the sort of amoral technology, we're going to lose our minds on this show.
See, I sat down. I have a confession to make. I have one more television show that I watch. Okay. I've added one to the list. I watch Mad Men now.
Oh, have you? See, I just don't have time because I've been hearing about that one, but I just haven't been able to.
Well, it's fun if for no other reason than the just watching the set dressing that has to go on. To make a 22-inch black and white television, you know, display a program.
Oh, no, it looks hecka interesting. Maybe I can stream it from Netflix.
You can get it on iTunes. I know that. They tell you every episode.
Right. Okay. But I know because when I get a break, because I've been wanting to look at that because that period in America is so interesting anyway, and I hear that that show is pretty true to it, right?
Oh, yeah, it is, and yeah. Because I sat there watching it with Agnes last night, and see, we jumped in the middle. What you really, because it's very serialized, and you want to start at season one. This is season three, I think.
Yeah, no, I definitely.
And season one is available on Netflix.
Yeah, okay. Cause
but, here are these men and these women impeccably dressed. Last night there was a dude had just swum 50 laps at the Y before going back to work at the ad agency. So he's standing out in front of the athletic club, reaches in that shirt pocket, whips out a Chesterfield or whatever and stokes it up. And I'm thinking because until you see something like this, you don't realize the transition that's taken place. Because, watching them, sit around and everybody's got a cocktail during a brainstorming meeting.
Oh, yeah, the drinking. And
yeah, not this America. No, we're the Puritanism has grabbed us by the short and curlies. But it's stuff like watching people, using a rotary phone.
Right, yeah, no, definitely. I have to check that show out because I hear that they're all dressed, but there's some pretty effed up head games going on, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you sit there there was a scene where a little baby gets picked up, and you realize in the context of, that baby's born in 1960. And then I just looked at Agnes and I said, isn't it wild? That baby he's picking up is 50 now.
Right, right. Well, no, I hear that's a good show, and that the whole female aspect of it is pretty over the top.
Oh,
what I've read.
Oh, it is.
They're like, yikes.
Yeah, very much so. And by the way, a note coming in from David in Tennessee. He says, please tell Sandra I thank her for joining me and leaving face page, my book, whatever the, and leaving it all completely alone.
Well, I mean, obviously, with you, you need to. You're like, right in the thick of it, it's a good tool, but I'm not feeling the weird-ass currency and the fake games and the economic thing they're trying to get going on. No, all that is too weird because that is working for free.
And, by the way, this will come in handy for me, too. Ron in Raleigh also says, Mad Men is now available on FastPassTV.com.
Okay, I don't know that.
I've never said no. Fast, F-A-S-T, pass, PASSTV.com.
Oh, okay. Hey, listen, what I want, PG&E just did this $100 million fund, I guess without being asked, and they're giving $50,000 each for people to meet day-to-day needs. So, on the face of it, that's good, but they're effed up. They need to be sued out of business. Hello.
Well, yeah, and see, that's the thing. That $100 million fund, you will have to sign a release promising never to do that.
Well, I don't
to get any of that coin.
No, I think the state needs, the regulators here are sort of making noises. I think PG&E is in pretty big trouble, actually.
I hope they are, and it would be nice if California wasn't just broken to the point of penury. if it could be, what's the state version of nationalized?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Domesticated.
They need to be, they're horrible.
But see, this entire country, there's nowhere in this country that needs a private power company.
Oh, no. And you remember when they spent a $45 million just recently trying to make it so nothing
could expand, right?
Right, but they lost. You know, they lost. And they spent 45. So keep this in mind, though, with that $100 million. They spent $45 million, Bob, for that campaign. So $45 million, $100 million. Not that much different.
No.
And they were happily, willing to spend that in order to keep this model in place for all of us Californians. I still can't get over those pictures. I was like, oh, dear God.
The devastation, well, it you